But as we begin our program tonight, I am extremely happy to welcome back to our show Jim Dean. He's chair of the group Democracy for America, the nation's largest political action committee based in Vermont. Jim, it's great to have you back on the show. Thank you for making it here tonight.
Well, Scott, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
So as we begin, it's probably good just to talk about your group briefly, Democracy for America, born out of your brother Howard Dean's presidential campaign in 2004, but certainly taken off on its own in many important ways for the progressive community.
Sure. Well, first, I have to say that it's not quite the largest political action community in this country, but we do have 1.2 million members. Including about 10,000 here in the great state of Connecticut, where I live. And we are really about helping those members make change in their communities, giving them assistance when they want to support candidates, ballot initiatives, different pieces of legislation. And that gets us involved in a year like this year a lot in terms of electoral politics. But it gets us involved all the time in things, everything ranging from the janitor strike for healthcare at the University of Miami a few years back to the Disclose Act, getting the Disclose Act passed in California for the last 3 years doing that and working on minimum wage battles and battles for racial justice in a number of cities around the country. So all politics is local. We do dip into the federal stuff and this year in the presidential primary. But again, we're about trying to be a resource for a lot of really good folks who are really working hard to make change all over this country. And certainly shout out to our folks in Connecticut, as well as many other great folks for the work that they have done, particularly with the Citizens Election Fund here and a number of other issues that are very important to all of us.
Thanks for that rundown, Jim, of the group that you work with, Democracy for America. And, I should make mention of it here, and we'll get to this topic a little later. Your group has endorsed Bernie Sanders for the Democratic Party nomination. We've got the Super Tuesday contest coming up, very important group of primaries across many states. I think it's 11 states. But we'll talk a bit about that later and the trajectory of Sanders' campaign and your hopes for that. But I thought we'd first of all talk about a very important issue on its own and, of course, related to the 2016 election, and that's the Supreme Court. Since the death of conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, there's been considerable focus on Republican Party statements pledging to block any nominee President Obama would put forward for Senate confirmation. They really have... the White House recently leaked information that they were vetting a potential nominee named Governor Brian Sandoval, a Republican of Nevada. He's since withdrawn, but your group and other progressive organizations opposed that, what many believe to be a trial balloon, and expressed concern about President Obama's approach to filling that important vacancy on the high court.
Sure. Well, we would encourage the president and continue to encourage the president to nominate somebody that really reflects the values of this country, which are really progressive values. And in particular, we have joined with noted activist and author Steve Phillips and a number of other groups to nominate a woman of color to the Supreme Court so that the Supreme Court not only looks like the rest of this country, but also reflects President Obama's very own desire for a justice who really understands what the effect of their decisions is on real people. So we want to push this as far as we can, we know that there are a number of great justices and attorneys generals and other great legal minds with great intellect who are women of color, who can fill this position. And we feel that it's time to really get beyond what has been the most partisan Supreme Court in this country, and certainly in the history in my lifetime anyway. And there are a few other issues with it, but I think most notably, I think it's time to move beyond all of that. And we certainly hope that President Obama will nominate. We were very disappointed in the Sandoval trial balloon, if we could call it that. Disappointed because it really had the sound of trying to pander to a part of the Senate, the Republican, the conservative Republicans, again, that really don't reflect the values of this country. So we want to get beyond that. And, it's no secret that the late Justice Scalia was a very partisan justice. And the Americans want a court that is going to, again, be about justice more than anything else. And by the way, Americans want a Supreme Court nominee and a Supreme Court justice. This is called conducting the nation's business. So what the Republicans are really doing now is something that I think is going to hurt them electorally in November. But what they're also doing, just as they have done with the mini budgets and everything else, is they're basically obstructing the entire process that Americans expect and Americans expect to better. Out of the Senate and out of the government. So we'll see what happens, but we're going to push for this as much as we can.
What do you think President Obama was trying to do by floating Republican Governor Sandoval's name as a possible nominee? This sounds like triangulation right out of the Bill Clinton playbook of the 90s. Well, it's troubling. It's troubling to your group, I know. But given the Republican stand, maybe he thought that was the only way he could get any movement in the Senate. What do you think?
Well, I that's, of course, my best guess, but it is just a guess. The fact is that it was a trial balloon. There was no nomination going on. And certainly I don't book anything with the White House if they want to vet a whole ton of people out of this. But on the other hand, because it was a trial balloon, because it was public, we felt compelled to make sure that the president, the White House, would know our views and the views of a lot of other constituents, and certainly the views of a number of other organizations representing millions of voters and taxpayers, that this was not the right way to go. This isn't about triangulation. The era of triangulation is long over. This is about getting somebody who's qualified to be on the Supreme Court, and again, somebody who reflects what this country looks like, what this country is, and especially, as Obama has said, understands the reality of their decisions and the effect of their decisions on real people, which is something that this court, unfortunately, at least the conservative majority, has been very bereft in.
We're speaking with Jim Dean, chair of the group Democracy for America, and we're talking about the Supreme Court vacancy left by the death of the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Jim, we know that President Barack Obama has pledged to put forward a nominee, yet Senate Republicans have pledged to block any confirmation hearings, let alone giving any nominee a fair chance to be heard. What is it that you think the president and his allies and progressives across the country can do to put pressure on the Republican Party to abide by the Constitution and move forward with a nominee that President Obama puts forward in the near future?
Well, I certainly think there's a lot that can be done here, and certainly calling members of the Senate does matter, by the way. These folks do know how many people are calling in support or how many people are calling pushing back on the actions that they take in the Senate, and the same goes for the House of Representatives and other legislative offices. So making our voice heard is very important. Now, we have to understand that the president has got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, there's a number of international crises, humanitarian crises around this planet that he's got to be involved with, a lot of other legislation that he has to be involved with. So what I am hopeful for is that the White House will devote the number of people that are necessary, not just to vet the justices for their qualifications, but also to continue leading this campaign and reminding the American people every single day that there isn't a confirmation hearing, that the Republicans are, in fact, being bereft in their duty to conduct the nation's business. So we're going to have to do this, and we're going to have to take it upon ourselves to be very active. And what I really don't want to see, and what I fear a little bit, Scott, is that we could end up in a situation in July where we don't have a nominee, there isn't any hearing going on, and everybody's sort of forgotten about it. We've seen that happen before. We need to make sure that this issue is front and center, and we need to demand that Republicans and Democrats, where needed, get this nomination done the way the American people expect, and that we have a fully staffed and fully a full Supreme Court to rule on the different cases that they're going to be hearing. So it's going to be a little bit of a campaign going on, but it's certainly one that I know our members of Democracy for America are up for, and I'm sure a lot of other folks around the country will be up for when they realize that the interference that's going on with the judicial process, if the Republicans choose to go that route as they say they are.
Jim, what shape do you think the campaign to pressure the Senate to actually hold confirmation hearings for a Supreme Court nominee, what shape will that take during the election campaign? The Republicans, say they're going to be using this issue to mobilize their base for the November election, given that the longtime conservative majority on the court could be lost if President Obama does appoint a new Supreme Court justice. And, of course, on the Democratic and progressive side, there could be a real mobilization of voters to turn back that majority before the election. How do you think it'll play?
Well, there are going to be a lot of different levels. And certainly there's the nuts and bolts of this, which I talked about earlier, alluded to earlier, which is making our voice heard. But I think what you're seeing here is as the Republicans pander to what is a base that, frankly, is not capable or not large enough of electing one of their presidents. I mean, they just don't have enough people. They may vote 100%, but they don't have enough folks in their base to see this through. And I think what you're going to see is more and more people frustrated, more and more independents frustrated, more and more women and other minorities who have been, not minorities, but other folks, constituencies that have been affected by the Supreme Court rulings, get frustrated and start to make their voices heard and start to make a determination about who they're going to vote for and certainly make a resolve for themselves to vote. Which is something that we've actually been having a problem with, since, and particularly in these off-year elections over the last 8 years. So I think the longer this goes on, the more you're going to see other folks mobilize, either just to go to the polls or to start working for candidates who are going to change this. And you're going to see a lot of folks mobilize because they're going to understand exactly what is at stake. We always talk about the importance of the Supreme Court in a presidential election, but we really are going to see a lot more of that now, and I think that means you're going to see a lot more folks voting on the Democratic side if the Republicans feel that they can and try and succeed at obstructing this through November. I think people are really going to be pretty fed up by that point.
Jim, you want to summarize for our listeners some of the pending cases that are viewed as quite important to yours and other groups around the country, as well as the overall importance and what's at stake with the shape of the Supreme Court going forward?
Well, I think I can't speak to every single case, but certainly there are cases involving employee rights, labor rights, and especially abortion rights that are coming before the court right now. And there are a number of other, certainly voting rights is another case that's before the court. In its previous thing, they've been frankly disposed towards limiting this. But I think you have actually a core group of court justices who are very much about jurisprudence and very much not about trying to steer the court in an ideological direction, one way or the other. Certainly Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been all of that, but I would also point to Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, who have been essentially about jurisprudence and not about ideology. And I think there's a certain level of competency that goes with that that is very refreshing and noticed among folks who follow this. So we want to see more of that from the court, and I think, you know, we have an opportunity for that right now. But the big thing, again, is to make sure that it happens, and the big thing, if it's not going to happen, is to make sure that those who obstruct this pay the price for it at the polls in November.
Jim, one name that's been suggested by yours and other groups and a lot of folks around the country is there's a suggestion that President Obama should turn to his administration's own Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, who, if confirmed, would be the High Court's first woman of color to be a justice. What are the chances of that happening, you think? Is that something you're prioritizing when you put out the word to the president?
Well, certainly we feel that the court's absence of women of color on it, again, is not a good thing. And we do, as I mentioned earlier, we want a court that that reflects not only the values of all Americans, but looks like the rest of them American and has those experiences that go with it. So she is certainly qualified to do this job. There's no question about it. There are other names that have been floated about, so I'm a little bit loath to start picking one over the other at this very early stage of the game, and certainly the president's going to need some time to vet other candidates and arrive at a conclusion about whom he wants to nominate. But you certainly cannot argue, I think, with Attorney General Lynch's qualifications to be on this court, and there's a number of other justices out there that you probably can't argue about their qualifications either. So I think there's, in spite of the fact that the Republican Republican Senate has absolutely refused many of Obama's appointments to federal judgeships, there's actually a fairly deep bench there, which I'm really, really pleased about. And I think you're going to see some of that talent come forward as this process goes forward.
Well, Jim, I wanted to close out with one last question relating to Bernie Sanders' candidacy. Bernie Sanders is the candidate your organization, Democracy for America, has endorsed. I wanted to ask you a question about movement building, because I know myself in circles of people who support Bernie Sanders, and there have been some important articles out there discussing the issue of what happens after the Bernie Sanders candidacy either wins the nomination or he loses the nomination to Hillary Clinton. And there's some hope out there that all the people who've been mobilized by Bernie Sanders' campaign and his very unique articulation of a whole set of progressive issues that really haven't been talked about in a presidential campaign in many, many years, that whatever happens to the campaign, there's hope that a movement could be built, both in terms of the names that are being compiled and those activists who've flocked to volunteer for his campaign and the money that's been contributed for the purpose of promoting Bernie Sanders' progressive agenda. And given the fact that your organization, Democracy for America, in many ways, grew out of your brother Howard Dean's 2004 campaign, do you have any inside track on what might happen to this enormous and powerful group of activists after the campaign, win or lose?
Well, it's my hope that they will continue to be engaged. And I very much view our job, no matter what happens to this campaign, about making sure that these great activists, and they really are terrific. I've had a great pleasure to work with them in Iowa and New Hampshire and in other states around the country. We really want to make sure that we are affording this kind of support and opportunity out there to make big changes, because they're not just happening at the presidential level. They can happen at all kinds of different levels. I mean, there's a great candidate for mayor of Stockton, California, Michael Tubbs, about 28 years old, a two-term city council member who is all about change. There are a number of things that are going on in cities all over this country that are furthering the cause of racial justice and furthering the cause to move out of this situation of economic inequality that we have in so many places and all over the country. And those are happening right now, and our job is to make sure that no matter what happens in this campaign, as we go forward beyond whenever that may be, that we're going to fully engage and continue to change in these different parts of the country to make this country what it's supposed to be. And, you know, I think the Democratic leadership owes a great deal of thanks to Senator Bernie Sanders for not only running as a Democrat, but bringing this party at least a little bit further back to the values that we really have had historically. And he's really done a lot of people a lot of favors, not the least of which is Secretary Clinton, by being in this campaign. So we need to take a lot of good out of this, because there's a lot of good there. But my hope is that this campaign is going to continue on. I think when you look at the pledged delegate count, which is really the delegate count that really matters, You're going to see this. You're going to see this campaign within reach after tomorrow. And when that happens, that means we're going into states that we're this campaign can win. And I fully expect to go all the way to the convention.
Well, a lot more to talk about there in terms of delegates and conventions and prognosticators who are saying Bernie should pack it in, and people like yourself who say the fight has just begun. Bernie Sanders,
that's,
I think,
right,
said that the other day. But, Jim, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I know we'll be talking again soon before the actual fall election campaign season begins. But thanks for being here tonight. And leave our listeners with your website, if you would.
Sure. That is democracyforamerica.com. And a quick shout out to WPKN, which is a local radio station. I know you're on it, and great station. And Scott, really appreciate your having me on.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jim. We'll look forward to the next time. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. That's Jim Dean, chair of the group Democracy for America. We'll be checking with Jim again on the state of Bernie's campaign and the entire environment out there related to the election.